Blog Talk Radio. but what it sounds is arrogant. If you get it before you get the best, lighting out the days of it.
Yourself. You can't believe it, but you have been. You've been fooling yourself for a long fucking time. Wow. Anyway, glad to see everybody here. Welcome to the show tonight. You know, the topic of the show is, you know, how much have you been fucked and not even feeling it? Pretty sad case, ain't it? Yeah, that's the reality of the bullshit we live in. So, anyway, not to be short, we're going to flip some clips here as usual, same old rolling bullshit I do. I bring out the best of the fucking tard. So anyway, let's check out Santos. You know, I think he's trying to beat Santo Claus, but I don't think he can do it. So let's check out his bullshit. Check it out.
Now to the race for the White House and a major campaign shakeup. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis cutting about a dozen staffers with more changes expected, including a shift in his messaging. All of this is the first contest of the season. The Iowa caucuses are less than 6 months away. Here's ABC's Mary Alice Parks.
Tonight, the major shakeup in the campaign for the White House, 6 months to the crucial Iowa caucuses. Faced with the reality that he'd been quickly burning through cash, ABC News has learned that Florida Governor Ron DeSantis already cut about a dozen staffers, with more changes expected. This weekend in Iowa, one supporter telling DeSantis outright he should focus more on issues that affect families, like the economy.
I'd like to have you talk more about the kitchen table issues.
But last night, DeSantis lobbing very personal attacks instead, mocking 80-year-old President Biden for his age.
Biden, I think, has been in two states too today, confusion and disorientation.
The president's team brushed off these sorts of attacks and instead pointed to DeSantis' own struggles with his campaign. Speaking to his own crowd in Florida, former President Trump blasted DeSantis for challenging him, suggesting any primary challenger to him was bad for the GOP.
His establishment handlers are wasting such precious time and resources to divide the party. They're dividing the party, although he's dropping so quickly, he's probably not going to be in second place much longer.
Ferocious attacks colliding with the deadline to report second quarter fundraising and spending total, a peek behind the early campaign curtain. Trump raking in eight figures, DeSantis too, but he is relying heavily on big dollar donors. The report's only a part of the picture. They do not include money going to PACs and super PACs. At the other end of the spectrum, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie netting just $1.6 million, a third, though, from small dollar donors. Candidates like Nikki Haley and Tim Scott in the middle of the pack, both with more cash on hand for the long haul. And Lindsay, again, these reports don't tell us everything. We know a lot of candidates also fundraise through their PACs and super PACs. And of course, money isn't everything. There have been plenty of candidates over the years who start out flush with cash and still struggle in the end. Lindsay.
Mary Alice, thank you.
Hi, everyone. George Stephanopoulos here. Thanks for checking out the ABC News YouTube channel. If you'd like to get more videos, show highlights, and watch...
I'm sorry, I wasn't, I had myself muted on the board. I'm sorry, Snuffleupagus, we don't fucking pay attention to you and we don't back your fucking shit. But I just wanted to hear your story. But anyway, we're going to continue on. This, you know, this kind of reminds me of a song back in the day. You remember the song Backstabber? You remember that? Smile on your face. You know, nothing but a fucking disgrace. Backstabber. Remember that one? Well, here's this backstabbing motherfucker for you. Listen to this bullshit. Here you go.
John Kerry testifying on Capitol Hill today, where lawmakers appeared to hit a nerve with the climate czar when pressing him on his past experiences with private jets.
We don't own a private jet. I don't own a private jet. I personally have never owned a private jet. And obviously, it's pretty stupid to talk about coming in a private jet from the State Department up here.
Have you flown on a private jet in a personal or official capacity since you've taken this position?
Possibly once. I think.
Touchy much? Our climate envoy definitely enjoyed the luxury of flying on a private jet. His family, just not long ago, sold a Gulfstream 4, to be exact. He's got a trip to China coming up. I bet he's not waiting on those backed up lines at the airport.
Hey, let's talk about it. For much more on this, and we're going to bring in ClimateDepot.com publisher Mark Morano. Mark, let's just start with this private jet back and forth, where he said sort of indignantly, I've never personally owned a private jet. Well, yeah. I looked, and there was a New York Post article from 2021, August, so basically 2 years ago. The headline was, John Kerry's family jet has taken 16 trips this year alone. Maybe he's trying to argue that he personally didn't sign like the deed to the, I don't know, do you have a deed to a plane? I'm not that rich. But he's trying to spin this as, oh, what, private jets? That's not my thing. Is anyone buying that? We've been talking about his family's private jet for years.
Yeah, I mean, this is Bill Clinton-level word parsing, what you just saw there today. Now, keep in mind, John Kerry, when he was confronted publicly last time, it was in Iceland, when he was there, flew on a private jet to Iceland to pick up an environmental award. And he gave the original defense the equivalent of, do you know who I am? I'm so important. I have to fly a private jet. I'm trying to save the climate. Like, he doesn't have time to be with the masses on an airplane. Well, what he did today was he said, I don't own a private jet, and we don't own one, meaning his wife owned one until last year.
Right.
And now he says he's only been on one flight. That goes with a lot of contradictory evidence. There's evidence that shows since the Biden administration started, he's been on several dozen private jet flights. Bill Gates, by the way, was asked the same thing. He said he gives the carbon offset funds when he flies a private jet.
Nice.
Al Gore actually had the same exact line about 20 years ago. He said he didn't own a private jet without addressing whether he flew them. So this is Bill Clinton level parson.
Right. It's sow flop. And that's what they can do with it. A new twist in the green war on gasoline-powered vehicles. A study, and it's an extensive one from the Manhattan Institute, calling President Biden's electric vehicle mandates an impossible dream. The dream issue, what it is these are direct and indirect forcing individuals to drive electric vehicles. But it will be impossible because it also factors in people driving so much less. This will never they are going to force you to drive an electric vehicle come hell or high water. And I don't think the American people are fully aware of what they're up to.
No, I mean, this really isn't about them driving an electric car. This is literally the banning of gas-powered cars. It's all done, by the way, just like a COVID lockdown. There's no vote on this. This is done. Gavin Newsom issues an executive order. Unelected bureaucrats follow suit. The Biden administration is looking to do executive. The EPA is doing all these standards. You have the World Bank telling automakers they're not going to finance gas-powered cars to Nicholas Stern, the former president. You have Australian corporate banks saying they're not going to give out car loans. It's corporate government collusion. The intent here is not to necessarily force people to own an electric car. The intent is to collapse our plentiful freedom of movement and force us to use mass transit. They want us on the subway, they want us in buses, and they want us in any form of mass transit. That's what this is about. They want, and if we even have Boris Johnson's transportation secretary said owning a car was outdated 20th century. So that's what it's about. They're rationing vehicle use. It's very simple. And you can look at Cuba to see how that turned out. You're going to have a lot of used cars.
So what? Mass transit for all of us, private jets for them. That's a pretty good deal for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark Morano, thank you so much.
Exactly. And when you look, sure. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
That's the deal. Fuck you, people of America. Fuck you. We'll fly around on jets that uses fuel, not electric. You know what I mean? That ain't going to happen. They're going to be flown by fuel, and we're going to drive cars with fuel, but you're forced into buying an electric car. And the reason why I think I'm not cussing at you at all, man. But, you know, what I mean by fuck no jack it up, because it might as well. If you're going to fuck the American people, give us all of it. Don't be fucking with us. I mean, completely go ahead and fuck us. This shit ain't going to work out anyway. I promise you that. This electric vehicle shit ain't going to fucking work. They think it is, but no, it's not. It's already proven. I've seen many videos and read a lot of different things in this. And these motherfuckers, the availability for charge stations makes it impossible a lot of times as far as driving any long distance like that, you know. So that fucking puts us that out of the fucking way. So, you know, the thing of it is, I mean, I think they're great. I do. I love electric cars. But they're only designed for a short distance. They're not really made for anything. Then you got all these motherfuckers catching on fire. They're wanting to build school buses out of these motherfuckers. You can imagine the size of battery they got to put in that fucking bus to drive that motherfucker. Really? See, and, you know, trash trucks, fire trucks. You know, I don't know. It's the technology just ain't there yet. It just ain't there. I mean, it is and it isn't. It just, you know, this is completely some type of control mechanism they're wanting to fucking do for some weird reason. You know, they want to stash all the oil forever. We never burn them off the planet anymore. And I'm cool with that, too. But, you know, fossil fuel has been the fucking ticket for us. So, you know, man. Anyway, I hate to jump into iterate that, but, or, you know, show my ignorance to the point. But anyway. I'm not done flipping clips. So we got, let's rock on. Here we go. This ought to be entertaining, though.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Comey, have you ever heard the expression, power doesn't change people, it just unmasks them?
No, I don't think so.
How's your book coming? How many copies have you sold?
I don't know, a lot. I have a new one coming out in January about the Justice Department. I hope that'll sell a lot too, but I don't know the numbers.
You enjoy attention, don't you, Mr. Comey?
I do not. I enjoy attention from my family. I do not enjoy being recognized in public in my B-list celebrity fame, which I hope will go away very soon.
Well, I'll give you this. You have been an equal opportunity egotist. You have tried to screw both Trump and Clinton. Let's talk about Clinton first. When you were head of the FBI, you investigated Secretary Clinton and her emails and her server, did you not?
FBI team did while I was director, yes.
And you concluded that there were no criminal violations, did you not?
There were no violations that a reasonable prosecutor would pursue.
But you didn't just issue a statement. You called a press conference. And you commented on her behavior. You said she was extremely careless, but in your opinion, there was no criminal intent. What were you thinking of? I mean, this is the Democratic nominee for President of the United States. Didn't you realize that could have an impact on the investigation?
The investigation was ending at that point when I issued the summary of what we had concluded.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. Didn't you realize that could have an impact on the election?
Oh, potentially, sure. And I was trying to offer...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was trying to offer transparency about the justification for ending an investigation of intense interest to the American people in July 5th of 2016.
Well, you gave us a full dose of transparency. 11 days before the election, you sent a letter to Congress saying, oh, never mind what I said in my press conference, my unprecedented press conference. I'm going to reopen the investigation, didn't you?
Correct. I didn't say what you just said in the letter, but I told the chairs of the committees we're reopening the investigation to examine some additional material.
And then a few days later, right before the election, you said, never mind. She didn't do anything.
No, I said the examination was completed and it doesn't change our view.
And this is, we're not talking about a parking ticket here. We're talking about the Democratic nominee for President of the United States, the most powerful person in the free world. And you didn't think that would have an impact on the election?
Oh, I knew it could potentially have an impact no matter what we did.
And you don't like attention?
Yes, both of those things are true at the same time. Sometimes you have to make hard decisions and you don't like attention.
Let's talk about Trump. You didn't really care about Dr. Page, did you? You wanted Trump, didn't you?
That is not accurate.
When you went and got these warrants to investigate Dr. Page that you don't remember much about, what did that allow you to do? Could you follow him around?
First, I didn't, Senator, go get any warrants. The investigative team and the lawyers from DOJ got offered.
Right. Could you follow him around with the authority from FISA?
No, you didn't need authority from FISA to follow someone around. This is about electronic surveillance.
Oh, so you could wiretap him?
It allowed you to collect electronic communications that he was engaged in.
You can wiretap him?
Yeah, that's the old-fashioned term, but yes, it gave you authority to collect electronic communications. Almost no one uses.
Could you bug him?
I don't think there was authority in the FISA application for a remote listening device.
Could you open his mail?
I don't think that was included either.
But you don't remember?
I don't. It's easy to figure out, but sitting here, I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. And you're saying today that... That if you knew now what you didn't know then, that you wouldn't have signed the application?
I would not have signed the narrow certification the FBI director has to give, but more importantly, I'd want to know from the team, how are you thinking about this? Why are these things not being included?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean, you're a smart guy. You're an honors graduate, William & Mary, Chicago Law School. And you don't like attention. And I'm trying to understand that this, you're investigating the Republican nominee for President of the United States. Okay, you've already finished with the Democratic nominee.
Yeah,
now
it's
the Republican nominee, and you got a FISA warrant that was a lie, and you say, well, it wasn't. You're head of the FBI. Didn't you check? Didn't you go, hey guys, this is this is a nominee for President of the United States. Let's sit down and talk about what's your evidence. You never did that.
Senator, we were never investigating the candidate, the Republican candidate, Mr. Trump. This is about a surveillance warrant on someone who was no longer associated with the campaign.
Oh, you just got his name out of the white pages.
Whose name?
And then with General Flynn, you've wrapped up your investigation, but you decide to take one more shot. Sally Yates says you went rogue. Isn't that accurate?
It is not accurate.
Well, why would she say that? She sure didn't compliment you. I was sitting right here, bigger than Dallas. Listen to her. She said you went rogue.
And she asking me what she meant by that?
Yeah, what do you think about that?
I think she was disappointed that I didn't coordinate the Flynn interview with her in advance, and I understood her concern about that. I think she understood my explanation afterwards as to why I used my authority, which I have, to do it without coordinating.
But you don't like attention.
I stand by my earlier answer. I love attention from my grandchildren and my children and my wife. The rest of it, I could let politicians have it.
Can we agree that the FBI is the premier law enforcement agency in all of human history?
I think so. At risk of offending DEA, I think so.
Mr. Comey, if you'd chosen a different career, say a driving instructor, and you'd never pursued a career at the FBI, don't you think the FBI would be better off?
I didn't pursue a career at the FBI. I was very happily teaching at Columbia when I was asked to become FBI director.
That's enough. So we'll go to our next Senator Blackburn a minute. Are you aware that Mr. Barnett, who is the lead investigator of the Flynn case, recently said that he did not believe there was a crime involving General Flynn?
I read his 302, and I think it does say that he thought that before January 5th or before Flynn was interviewed.
So how normal is it for the lead investigator to believe that the person he's investigating didn't commit a crime and went so far as to say they thought the whole team was out to get Trump? Is that a normal thing in the FBI? Is that something the court should consider as to whether or not this is a legitimate prosecution?
I think Mr. Barnett was confusing the nature of the investigation, which is a little bit concerning if he was working on it. It was a counterintelligence investigation, not a criminal investigation.
No, so here's the point, Mr. Comey. You set Flynn up to get prosecuted. This was a counterintelligence investigation, and there was no there. This man was the incoming national security advisor. He had every reason in the world to be talking to the Russians about changing policy. But this whole rogue thing, setting up an interview in the White House, going around normal procedures, bothered a lot of people. Are you aware that agents felt that the investigation was conducted so poorly that they had to buy liability insurance or thought about buying liability insurance?
I am not, although I thought all FBI agents...
I just want the public to know this was so bad by the people involved, they felt like they needed to buy liability insurance, that the man involved investigating General Flynn didn't believe the man committed a crime, and what they charged him with was giving false information about a
contact with the Russian ambassador when he was the national security advisor, which was on tape. And when Mr. Barnett looked at the Kislyak interaction, he said, I haven't changed my mind. I think that's why the Department of Justice is so upset with the Flynn prosecution.
Yeah. Beyond the tools that you mentioned, are you at a position right now where you are, you know, by frustration or what have you, or wanting to put more pressure out of state, where you are going to, you know, strengthen measures against Sudan without calling them necessarily sanctions, or are you still in this process of engaging?
I will say that the two are not mutually exclusive. We do continue to consider what other measures might be appropriate that we could deploy while engaging in diplomacy in the region. And one thing we're not going to do is give up our engagement on this matter. It continues to be a high priority for us. Assistant Secretary Fee has been in the region a number of times to work on this matter. Of course, John Godfrey is still there, and it will continue to be a high priority. But I will acknowledge it is a very difficult solution that doesn't, you know, present easy solutions. It is a very difficult problem that doesn't present easy solutions. Yeah.
So if SAS and RSF are not part of these discussions in Ethiopia, what impact can they realistically make on this conflict?
Well, we think it's important to engage a number of parties in the region, governments in the region, especially those who have their own relationships with the two warring parties. And it's also important for us to engage not just with those governments, but with civilian authorities and civilian representatives in Sudan to make clear that we don't believe that there is a military solution to this conflict, and we believe there should ultimately be a transition to democracy. But I take your point. We have engaged with both of the factions since day one, and the point that we're at now is we've seen both factions continually agree to ceasefires and then either violate those ceasefires or refuse to extend them when the ceasefires have expired. So we will continue to send the message to them that we don't believe that there is a military solution. We're going to engage with our partners in the region, and we're going to continue to consider measures with which we can hold either party accountable.
Well, don't that just work out fucking fine and dandy? Well, anyway, just piss you off some more. I got one more clip. So anyway, it's the last one. Then we'll get open the phone lines up, and we'll see what it is. This is the end of the week cast. We're going to pull this together for everything we did through the week, and we're just going to blast all one night. So this is another fun topic that I know everybody loves to talk about. You know, I sure the fuck do. When I talk about digital currency. the death of the dollar. The death of the dollar. So, check this one out. Here we go. Fuck me.
53% of Fortune 100 companies have embraced crypto, blockchain, and Web3 technologies. Why? Well, to stay ahead in the global economy, of course. These corporations, the 100 largest public and private companies in the United States, know that our century-old global financial system needs updating, that blockchain can be a foundational solution, and that not keeping pace will mean losing ground in this global economy to competitors from around the world. Now, these are just a few of the findings from The State of Crypto, a report recently released by Coinbase in partnership with The Block. The report explores the growing embrace of crypto, blockchain, and Web3 by corporate America since 2022. It takes data from both Fortune 100 and Fortune 500 companies and looks at what's driving this development, explores trends in investment and innovation, and examines how continued regulatory uncertainty may affect all facets of crypto and Web3. So, in this video, I'll break down the report so you don't have to read it yourself. That said, I will, of course, leave a link to it in the description if you do. And now, on with the show. I have to say, this report filled me with a mixture of optimism and frustration. Optimism for the state of crypto and frustration over the debacle that is US crypto regulation, or lack thereof. The report shows that most executives are acutely aware of the transformative power of Web3 technology, realize they need to adopt it to stay competitive, and are willing to put their money where their mouths are by investing in the sector. Yet one of the largest barriers to adoption is the unclear regulatory environment in the United States. Both this report, as well as Coinbase's State of Crypto Summit, which brought together hundreds of industry leaders, highlight how the U.S. risks losing jobs, financial status, and investment opportunities to other jurisdictions. Two key statistics in the report highlight this trend starkly. First, the U.S.'s share of global Web3 development has dropped from 40% to 29% in the last 6 years. And yes, you heard that right, an 11% drop in just over half a decade. And that's not all. According to the report, the U.S. is at risk of losing out on 1 million Web3 developer jobs and 3 million related non-technical jobs to other countries between now and 2030 if it continues on its current path of regulation by enforcement. This is what is at stake as Gary Gensler and his posse at the SEC continue to obfuscate, debate, and frustrate. It's enough to make you irate. Now, of course, Coinbase, as one of the exchanges currently being sued by the SEC, likely has a somewhat anti-SEC agenda. Nevertheless, the data speaks for itself. And moreover, if you've been following this channel or have watched any of the panels from the State of Crypto Summit, which I'll link to below, you'll notice this sense of frustration is far-reaching. This was particularly evident in the panel titled The Road to Regulatory Clarity, where Michael Piwawa, the former chairman of the SEC, and J. Christopher Giancarlo, the former chairman of the CFTC, pulled no punches as they lamented how the U.S. system and its quibbles over whether an asset is a security or a commodity is stifling innovation and ensuring the country's economic adversaries are gaining a competitive advantage. As J. Christopher put it, quote, "We're resisting this innovation, and by resisting it, we're not influencing it. Others are going to have a much greater influence." Now, let's get back to the reports and dig into the main findings. First, let's look at the companies that are adopting crypto. Unsurprisingly, the vast majority, around 75% of crypto activities, are taken up by companies in tech, financial services, and retail since Q1 of 2020. Among the top 10 Fortune 100 brands in terms of volume of Web3 initiatives, you have companies across four sectors: tech, banking, retail, and beverage. In order, these are IBM, which tops the list with 18 initiatives. Next, you have both Microsoft and Google's parent company Alphabet at 11. Then there's Goldman Sachs with 10, JP Morgan Chase with 9, Amazon and Citigroup with 6 apiece, and Coca-Cola, Nike, and Bank of America with 5 each. Interestingly, while the insurance industry doesn't have many Web3 initiatives overall, there are 2 notable outliers. MassMutual has taken part in 7 investment rounds, totaling $1.3 billion, and State Farm, another insurance company, ranks 5th among all Fortune 100 companies in terms of Web3 patents filed at 135. So why are all these companies investing in crypto and Web3? Well, put simply, the biggest brands on the planet understand the revolutionary potential of Web3 technologies. 63% of surveyed crypto-stroke blockchain-aware Fortune 500 executives say Web3 technologies will be pivotal for business, comparing Web3 to the internet or artificial intelligence. The report also suggests that AI and Web3's paths are likely to intersect, an exciting prospect. Indications of this include IBM's leadership in the volume of Web3 initiatives in the context of its plan to replace nearly 8,000 jobs with AI, or Microsoft's high volume given its reported $13 billion investment in OpenAI. Another reason you could say these companies are innovating and investing in Web3 technologies is because of good old FOMO. It affects all of us folks. 64% of Fortune 500 executives who are familiar with cryptocurrency or blockchain say their competitors will boost investment in the next 2 years and are keen to stay ahead of the curve. Interestingly, staying ahead of competition is far more important than keeping customers happy. Just 45% of these executives said their motivation to invest in Web3 technologies is based on a desire to meet consumers' expectations. In order to determine the specific use cases of current and planned crypto, blockchain, and Web3 initiatives among Fortune 500 executives, researchers identified the Fortune 500 execs who are familiar with blockchain or crypto and are currently planning or have crypto initiatives or projects, and asked them, quote, what types of cryptocurrency, blockchain, or Web3 projects is your business working on or considering? As you can see from the graph, blockchain infrastructure topped that list at 52%, followed by data collection management, payments and settlements, supply chain management, and process automation stroke smart contracts. NFTs and collectibles and the metaverse were on the lower end with 20% and 18% respectively. But while NFTs have declined as a trend overall, they are driving retail's recent surge in Web3 initiatives, which is helping to diversify sector participation beyond tech and financial services and offers companies a path to a return on investment. As the report notes, Fortune 100 companies have accumulated royalty revenue of approximately $100 million from around 200,000 transactions involving just short of 120,000 distinct consumers. And leading the pack in terms of royalty revenue, distinct purchaser base, and the number of unique collections launched is none other than Nike. Moving on, let's take a look at investing trends. Both Web3 venture investment by Fortune 100 companies and the overall volume of Fortune 100 Web3 initiatives are down in 2023, in keeping with the broader pullback across all sectors due to the tough macro environment. However, we are seeing these building back at a respectable rate in 2023. Fortune 100 companies have made 109 private venture capital investments across 80 crypto blockchain startups since 2017, participating in rounds totaling more than $8 billion. As you can see in the graph, the most common crypto investment categories are financial services and enterprise solutions such as B2B blockchain-related services, together making up almost 50% of all deals, followed by infrastructure such as nodes or dev tooling. Citi Ventures, Google Ventures, Microsoft Ventures, and Goldman Sachs have made as many crypto private investments as all other Fortune 100 companies combined. As for the Fortune 500, meanwhile, the report indicates that the average Web3 initiative or project budget for 2023 is nearly $5.8 million. 57% of Fortune 500 executives interviewed believe that their company's investment will increase in the next 2 years. Approximately the same number believe their competitors' investments in Web3 will also increase over the same period. In other words, the race is on. Well, the race is on, but it's really more of an obstacle course. The report's final section looks at these obstacles, or rather main barriers to greater adoption of Web3 technologies. These include the need for education, technical skills development, and, no surprises here, regulatory clarity. First, on education, the report states that educating corporations and consumers about the benefits of investment in crypto and blockchain is crucial. Internal understanding of the technology, use cases, and how to get started on Web3 initiatives needs to be improved to remove barriers to adoption. Currently, the top sources for learning about these technologies are threefold. Industry reports are at the top with 63%, followed by industry events at 62% and news coverage at 49%. Funnily enough, the report doesn't specify how many executives watch Coin Bureau video summaries of industry reports and news coverage, but well, maybe there are a few. Now, the second obstacle to greater adoption is skills-based. At present, nearly a third of the executives cite a lack of trusted talent with the right skills. The report encourages partnerships with developer communities and colleges to educate more skilled talent and keep the innovation onshore in the United States. It estimates that there's potential for 1 million blockchain-related open source developer jobs and 3 million related non-technical jobs to be created by 2030. These are the same jobs Gary and the SEC risk driving to other jurisdictions. And here we segue smoothly to the third obstacle to greater adoption, the lack of regulatory clarity. A whopping 92% of surveyed executives urge policymakers to develop new regulations tailored to crypto, blockchain, and Web3 technologies instead of relying on outdated frameworks. 73% of the Fortune 500 executives say that for crypto, blockchain, or Web3 initiatives, their company would prefer working with a US-based partner. The stakes are high. If the US wants to maintain its leadership in the global financial system, then legislators need to come up with clear regulations that foster innovation and job creation. Failure to do this will result in a loss of influence over international financial and data standards, as well as a shift of innovation and investment to other countries. The EU, Japan, UAE, and the UK all stand to gain from US intransigence. So, in other words, sort it out, Gary. Anyway, leaving aside the dithering and hostility from Gary and co, it's encouraging to see that despite the bear market and the reputational damage to the sector caused by FTX, the majority of executives interviewed, quote, know that our century-old global financial system needs updating, and they appreciate that crypto, blockchain, and Web3 technology is the way to do it. I, for one, am excited to see the fruits of these investments in innovation, and the intersection between AI and crypto is a particularly interesting dimension. Hey, we might even do a video on that, in fact, so keep an eye out. And if you haven't already, like and subscribe. You should also check out our deals page, where you'll find discounts on the very best crypto wallets, not to mention up to $40,000 in bonus airdrops at the best crypto exchanges. The links are, of course, in the description. So it's goodbye from me, and thank you for watching.
All right, there we go. All right, that's just another one way you're being fucked in. Yeah, innovation is great. I'm cool with it. Yeah, and I understand. Yeah, Web 2, I get that too. But you know, it's the way it is, man. It's the way the fuck it is. It ain't gonna change. I mean, anyway, you see. I mean, it's it don't matter. It just don't fucking matter, man. Whatever they do, they do. Whenever they want. So I'm opening up all my phone lines, whether hands up or not, I'm pulling you in. So get ready. So here it comes. You've been warned. I'm just, you know, it's that part of the show. Yeah. When we get to the second hour, I turn the phones on. Welcome to the shoe. Welcome to the really big shoe.
Hey. Very bum.
She all ran away from your phones. Phone's on. I hear you breathing.
This guy.
I hear you.
This guy called me.
But yeah, man. This guy called me.
It's such a...
This new technology, I'm kind of cool with it in a way of there again.
He's got such an ego.
You know, it's... guess I'm old. I'm going to stay with the 8-track. I don't want to get into the fucking, you know... yes, I do know for sure crypto, yeah. Yeah, I understand. Right. Yeah, I got that. That's exactly what he's talking about. Yeah. Take the money away. Take the money away from him, you know.
Yeah.
That's what you got to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, hey.
Yeah. Try to flip this clip here real quick just for a second. And anyway.
Introduced to defund the ATF Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. The conversation involves expresses of conversation to or support for the bill among the lawmakers present. Some lawmakers express their support for Mr. Gates' efforts to send a message to the ATF, while others do not explicitly state their position. The debate revolves around the proposed bill and its potential impact on law enforcement.
Are elite tactical groups that respond to high-risk law enforcement operations, so we don't want them to be able to do that in conjunction with local law enforcement. So that's what that bill would do. Mr. Gates' bill is, you know, one of the clearest efforts to defund law enforcement, and given that this underlying bill is about expressing our opposition to efforts to defund law enforcement, I presume I'll have the support of my colleagues to express opposition to that effort. And I'm happy to yield to my Republican colleagues if they want to express support for Mr. Gates' efforts to defund the ATF. Would any of my Republican colleagues like to express their support for Mr. Gates' efforts to defund the ATF?
I think we're going to get to that.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Jordan, would you like to you express your support for Mr. Gates' legislation
I'm going to yield to Mr. Gates.
No, I'm yielding to you, Mr. Jordan.
I'm going to listen to Mr. Gates' compelling arguments that I know will be coming, and then we will have a debate.
My time. I'd be happy to yield to you for the purpose of
Appreciate your willingness.
Mr. Jordan, if you'll let me finish.
I will.
It is my time. I'd be happy to yield to you for the purpose of saying yes or no whether you support Mr. Gates' efforts to defund the ATF. Do you, Mr. Jordan?
I support Mr. Gates' efforts to send a message to the ATF. That's what he said.
So you do support the legislation to defund the ATF?
I didn't say that. I said I support his efforts to send a message to
the
ATF.
The bill that Mr. Gates has introduced
changed the rule after 10 years of telling American citizens
that it would abolish, it would eliminate the Bureau immediately after enactment. Do you support that, Mr. Jordan? Yes or no?
Given my answer.
Do you support it?
Given my answer.
Yes or no, Mr. Jordan?
Given my answer. Mr.
Okay, I guess your answer is you don't support it, or you're afraid to say that you do. But I'm happy to yield to Mr. Johnson or Mr. Biggs or Mr. McClintock, Mr. Tiffany, Mr. Massey, anyone. Anyone else like to join Mr. Gates? And anyone like to express their support for Mr. Gates' effort to abolish an entire federal law enforcement agency? Anyone over there? Mr. Eisen, you support the abolition of the ATF?
Thank you for yielding.
It's a yes or no, Mr.
You and I have served here for almost 22 years.
We're claiming my time. I'm not getting a yes or no from anyone.
I was getting to that.
Well, yes or no.
I'm sorry, but
no, Mr. Eisen.
What I was saying is
yes or no.
It took 22 years to see you conducting a deposition of your colleague. I appreciate
it. We're claiming my time.
All right. Shift is a fucking tardo. I mean, I'm not going to play this whole thing. I just wanted you guys to see that fucking shit. You know, you're going to vote yes, sir. You're back, Mr. Gates' bill. We're going to get rid of the ATF. I wouldn't give a fuck if they did get rid of them. I wouldn't care.
Yeah, I wouldn't give a fuck either.
There's another fucking agency that wants to fucking run the fucking the world, like the FBI and everything else that wants to run the fucking show. Fuck these fucking politicians. We're going to do what we want when we want. Fuck them. We're going to fuck the American people, too. We're going to get something, too, out of this fucking deal. Fuck all them fuckers getting it all. So, you see, that's the world we live in. Everybody's out trying to fuck somebody. These politicians are good at fucking each other. I think they like it. I really do. I think they actually like this shit with each other, you know? It's fucking crazy.
They like the power.
Anyway, Gunslinger, where'd you do? Did you fall in or what's up, man?
Mikey,
you got your hand up. Can't anybody hear me? I can't hear nobody. Is that the problem?
Can you hear me?
Hear you.
Am I having issues with my fucking shit?
Hello, can you hear me?
Okay, now I'm fucking sorry. I'm on drugs. Could you hear me talking?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I
can. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes. Could you guys hear me talking before?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. We could hear you.
I got a switch issue, and this board is fucking with me, so I couldn't hear you guys.
Oh, okay.
I'm preaching the gospel Boy, I mean, what are you doing? I'm talking to the wall. You know, I mean, you can hear me, but I can't hear you. And with Switch fucking up on this board, I guess you guys are doing it. No big deal. I'll figure it out.
But I love that first clip. That's my senator. That was John Kennedy. First clip you played.
Right.
That was John Kennedy. I loved it. He took this guy has an ego the size of Texas on him, just Comey.
Yeah.
Oh, hey.
Right. Uh-huh. Okay, he's stuck on himself now. He thinks he's the fucking shit nowadays. Yeah, you know.
Oh, yeah. He thinks he's a fucking shit.
Anyway, you're surprised none of these other Congress people punched him in the face yet. Yeah, I'm surprised, too. That little fucking head cocksucker. You know, he needs his ass whipped. Take him out of the back of the fucking White House, whip his ass. You know what I'm saying? Little fucking jack off. You know, I can't stand him. Sipless.
Shit face.
I call him Sipless. That's his new name, Sipless. You know that Congress, Sipless. Adam Sipless. You said his name, Adam? Adam Sipless?
Yeah.
Adam Drip, motherfucker. I don't know who else we have on here, but 708, you're a new number, so whoever you are, I think, ringing out. Your mic is open, so remember, unless, you know, you tell me, shut it off, Ron. I'm not going to do it. But anyway.
Ron's not a certain... Badass motherfucker.
Sometimes, but no, man. I'm really a peaceful human person. I love people. I think it's a great thing ever. But there's too many dummies, and these dummies got power. Retards with power. Yeah, I mean, really. I mean, why? Whatever happened to common sense? These people. These people are the people we are trying to trust to run the fucking government, and they just can't seem to do it right. And most of the time, it doesn't seem to have anything to do with anything government operations. It's always somehow we can fuck somebody out of something. All the time. You see what I mean? That's all it is. There's never no fucking, any fucking thing you hear about fucking fixing a road or schools or, you know, every once in a blue moon you hear some silly shit. You know, the schools will be closed for too much fucking violence. That's more common. You know, but defund the cops. Let's get rid of the ATF. Let's get rid of them motherfuckers too.
You heard what that traitor Pence said. You know, he's going to be running for president, right? Supposedly.
Right.
You know, Pence.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. He was being interviewed by, I think it was Tucker Carlson, I think, and he was talking about Ukraine over there, right? And he said, "Well, I don't care about the American people. We need to concentrate on Ukraine." Out of his own fucking mouth. We need to concentrate. We need to give the money to Ukraine.
What makes Ukraine so goddamn important? What makes it so fucking important?
I don't know. But look up the fucking clip. He said it out of his own goddamn mouth. Something like, I don't care about the Americans. We need to concentrate on the Ukrainians. Fuck that motherfucker in the ass.
You're gonna make
he was a traitor when he was with Trump. I never did like that cheeky little goddamn cocksucker. He looked like a cocksucker, okay?
Right.
Now, pussy. He looked like a goddamn pussy sitting back there like, ooh, I'm scared to say anything. Ooh.
It popped right up like a fucking piece of popcorn. Pence interview. Wow.
There it is. Right there. Play it.
2 days ago. All right, here we go. Let's listen to it. All right. Let me know if you can hear it.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vice President. I know you're running for president. You are distressed that the Ukrainians don't have enough American tanks. Every city in the United States has become much worse over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Drive around. There's not one city that's gotten better in the United States.
Right.
And it's visible. Our economy has degraded. The suicide rate has jumped. Public filth and disorder and crime have exponentially increased. And yet your concern is that the Ukrainians, a country most people can't find on a map, who've received tens of billions of U.S. tax dollars, don't have enough tanks.
Right.
I think it's a fair question to ask, like, Where's the concern for the United States in that?
Well, it's not my concern. Tucker, I've heard that routine from you before, but that's not my concern. I'm running for president of the United States because I think this country's in a lot of trouble. I think Joe Biden has weakened America at home and abroad.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vice President. Have you
Okay, I'm running for president. That's a short clip.
You are distressed that the Ukrainians don't have enough.
Let me back it up and see if we find an actual clip. Okay.
You hear that? Not my concern. American people not my concern.
Yeah, if he, if the American people were his concern, he would have stayed and done his goddamn job on January 6th and disqualified those electors if the American people were his concern.
Like I said, he's a little snake in the grass, let me tell you. Let me tell you, he's a goddamn snake in the grass.
Sure. He's playing like a real true politician now.
I don't know.
When he, Trump's running mate, a real guy.
Right. I don't know who Trump listened to say, well, you got to have Pence as your running mate. I don't know who that person was, but obviously it was a wrong thing to listen to. You know? So, yeah, these people... Oh, it's not my concern. Well, fuck you, you son of a bitch. Fuck you.
Yeah, fuck the American people. Exactly. Fuck that pretty American well showed people. It up, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, he said, fuck you. He said, fuck you.
I found the actual clip. All right, anyway, I found the actual video on this. I'm going to play it, but I'm going to cut it up a little bit. So here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming the 48th Vice President of the United States of America, Mike Pence.
They launched a gusher of spending, $2 trillion in unnecessary spending that initiated the worst inflation in 40 years. They launched a war on energy. They dismantled all of our successful policies at the border, created the worst border crisis in history. And the reason I'm running for president of the United States is because I know we can do better. We can bring this nation back. We can restore the American economy. We can secure our border. And we can stand for the God-given liberties that have always made this country strong and true and great.
Amen. Amen. Well, thank you. We can certainly do better, that's for sure. So I have to ask you, since you were a witness to and in some unintentionally a participant in one of the most widely covered events in American history, January 6th, what was that? Do you think that was an insurrection?
Well, first, can I just take a moment just to say thank you to the family leader, to Bob Vanderplatz and the whole team here, and to our friends at Blaze TV, including my old friend Glenn Beck. We're standing here on a historic day in Iowa, when in just a few short hours, Governor Kim Reynolds would take to this stage and sign into law historic protections for the unborn. And I think all the members of the family leader here in Iowa prayed and worked and fought to bring us to this day. And it's an honor to be with you all. It really is. Now, as to that day, let me just say, all I know for sure, having lived through it at the Capitol, is that it was a tragic day. I've never used the word insurrection, Tucker, over the last 2 years, but it was a riot that took place at the Capitol that day. I saw firsthand in the where they'd evacuated us down to the loading dock below the Senate chamber, police officers that, as the day wore on, were streaming through 150 law enforcement officers that were assaulted. Obviously, the tragic loss of life ransacking the Capitol that occurred. But I really do believe that a day of tragedy became a triumph of freedom. And I'll always believe that by God's grace, I did my duty that day under the Constitution of the United States of America, and our institutions held.
When you say the tragic loss of life, who are you referring to?
Well, obviously, Ashley Babbitt would come to mind immediately.
What do you think of the fact that she was shot?
Well, I just think it was a tragic moment, without question. But I have to tell you that seeing people assaulting law enforcement officers, smashing windows, breaking into the Capitol building, it infuriated me. And it's very likely that the restraint that was shown by law enforcement officers saved lives that day. But I think it's important that we hold those accountable who perpetrated acts of violence and vandalism in our nation's capital. But I'm still waiting for equal vigor and equal prosecutions to be brought on those that brought hundreds of BLM riots to cities across America.
Amen.
I mean, the truth is, you know, we don't make progress in this country by walking away from the rule of law.
Let's go ahead and change it.
We uphold the rule of law, and we apply it equally and fairly. And I think that holding those accountable that rioted at the Capitol that day is right and proper. But I also believe that people that engaged in the hundreds of riots over the summer of 2020 literally burned out, you know, family businesses and communities and also cost lives.
Yes.
Must be held to account.
Amen. So we spent, when the BLM riots happened and the riot in front of the White House that injured more law enforcement personnel than January 6th, we spent a lot of time talking about why those rioters were mad. They were mad about systemic racism and the death of George Floyd, et cetera. Why do you think the people who swarmed the Capitol on January 6th were mad? And why haven't we talked about that?
Well, first off, I would tell you that I think the January 6th committee was a partisan committee in the Congress of the United States. And it failed its historic mission of bringing the facts forward.
Yep.
And I know your commitment to bringing all the facts to the American people, Tucker. And I know we're grateful for that. The truth of the matter is, as some members of the staff of the January 6th committee said after it adjourned, they spent all their time focused so much on one individual and on placing blame that they spent very little time focusing on law enforcement failures that happened that day and intelligence failures that happened that day. And I hold to the view that we can never let this happen again. We can never allow the capital of the greatest nation on earth to be subject to a riot for any purpose, for any motivation. And for that reason, we need to understand why law enforcement that day was not better equipped,
yeah,
better prepared, where the intelligence failures were. And I believe that in time we'll have those answers.
Amen. But I wonder, though, again, about motives, since these were, and I'm not excusing any act of violence ever anywhere, including on January 6th. However, they were American citizens. Most of them didn't commit acts of violence, and they were really mad. And they were mad because they thought the election was unfair.
Right.
And I wonder why more time hasn't been spent by either party reassuring Americans that our elections are real, that all votes are counted, that the electronic voting machines, which no one seemed to trust 10 years ago, now are infallible, why mail-in voting is a good thing. Like, why doesn't anybody try to reassure the public that the mechanics of voting are legit? And are they? Do you think the last election was fair?
Well, as I said on January 6th in my communication to the Congress, and have said many times since, there were irregularities in the 2020 election. There's no question. There were about a half a dozen states that changed the rules of elections in the name of COVID.
Yep.
And that undermined public confidence in the outcome of our elections. Now, at the end of the day, we brought more than 60 lawsuits. States engaged in recounts. And when states ultimately certified and courts upheld those changes in virtually every instance, and ultimately we were able to determine that the changes, there's no evidence that the changes had changed the outcome of the election in any way. I knew that my duty was clear that day. But candidly, as I've said before, you know, President Trump's words that day were reckless. I believe whatever his intentions in that moment, it endangered me and my family and everyone that was at the Capitol that day. I believe history will hold him accountable for that, just as the law will hold everyone that that engaged in acts of violence.
But may I just get, I mean, to the rest of us who weren't there, who were just participating or trying to in our democracy, 10 years ago, Democrats said, look, electronic voting machines can never be secure. And, of course, that's obviously true. Anything electronic can be subverted. Don't use electronic voting machines. Are you confident that a country with electronic voting machines, ours, can have an election that you're participating in that everyone can trust?
Well, I believe we can, but I welcome the fact that since 2020, Republican-led states around the country have enacted election integrity reforms. I'm somebody that believes that, and Indiana was the first state to do this, I'm somebody that believes that you ought to be required to give a picture ID when you go in to vote. We ought to have voter ID in every state in America. But with regard to voting machines, I would tell you we've had them in Indiana, but they, in Indiana and elsewhere, they produce paper ballots. Recounts were taken in states around the country. And I think it's absolutely essential that we do everything in our power to restore public confidence in the one person, one vote principle at the heart of this republic.
Why not just get rid of electronic voting machines and call it a day, and then we don't have to debate it?
Well, I would certainly be open to that.
Is there a downside?
but what I believe, Tucker, is that states govern elections. States ought to conduct our elections. In fact, our founding fathers debated this at the Constitutional Convention. It was one of the reasons why I believe that my duty was very clear on that day. Despite the fact that my former running mate continues to hold the view that I had the right to overturn the election, I had no right to overturn the election. The presidency belongs to the American people and the American people alone. I had no right to reject the return votes that day, and Kamala Harris will have no right to overturn the election when we beat them in 2024. But this principle of state control of elections is absolutely vital. We've got to – one of the very first bills that Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Joe Biden brought to the floor of the Congress was a bill to nationalize our elections. It's what essentially brought me off the sidelines. It was the first thing I spoke publicly against after I left my role as Vice President of the United States, because you never want Washington, D.C., or any one person in Washington, D.C., and people and the American people alone. I had no right – to reject the return votes that day, and Kamala Harris will have no right to overturn the election when we beat them in 2024. But this principle of state control of elections is absolutely vital. We've got to – one of the very first bills that Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and Joe Biden brought to the floor of the Congress was a bill to nationalize our elections. It's what essentially brought me off the sidelines. It was the first thing I spoke publicly against after I left my role as Vice President of the United States, because you never want Washington, D.C., or any one person in Washington, D.C., deciding our elections. And the truth is that one of the ways that we govern the integrity of our elections is by letting states like Iowa, like Indiana, every state across the country to be able to conduct our elections. So if states were interested in going to all paper ballots, I would cheer them on. If states were willing to use with strong integrity, continue to use electronic machines, I'll cheer them on.
But no state
states should govern elections in America now and always.
I think it seems like a good idea. It's a constitutional principle. That seems right to me. But in point of fact, no state, including the Republican governors, has really done anything about election integrity. They have not restored elections to what they were in, say, 1992, where you have paper ballots, you have voting on the day of the election, and you have voter ID. Like, these are super simple, but no one's done it. Why?
Well, I think there's plenty of opportunity to advance election integrity reforms around the country. As long as we don't intrude on the independence of states to conduct elections and to manage their elections, there are ways the federal government
yep.
provide resources and encourage reforms. And if I'm president of the United States, I promise you, we'll fight every day to restore public confidence in elections in this country.
So you've issued a – thank you for that. You've issued a bunch of public statements about your views on foreign policy, which are within – definitely within the mainstream of Republican views as far as I can tell. You recently met with Zelensky, according to news reports. And I'm wondering if during that meeting, as a prominent Christian leader, which you are in addition to your political views, you broached the question of his treatment of Christians within Ukraine. The Zelensky government has raided convents, arrested priests, has effectively banned a denomination, a Christian denomination, the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, within Ukraine, and persecuted Christians. And I wonder if you raised that with him.
I did raise the issue when we were there. And I raised it with the leader of the Orthodox Church when I was visiting Kyiv and asked him about concerns about religious liberty. He assured me that the Zelensky government in Ukraine was respecting religious liberty, even while recognizing that there were very small elements of the Russian Orthodox Church that were being utilized for the purpose of advancing the Russian cause in Ukraine, and that they were taking steps to hold them to account. But the leader of the church at St. Michael's in Kyiv told me personally that he believed that the Zelensky government was respecting religious liberty. And I must tell you, other than the sanctity of life, there's no higher priority in my life than preserving the freedom of religion in America and championing religious liberty around the world.
I'm confused. On this question, it's very clear that the Zelensky government has arrested priests for having views they disagree with. That's not consistent with religious liberty. It's an attack on it. And we're funding it. And I'm just wondering how is it, and I don't mean to be disrespectful at all, but I sincerely wonder how a Christian leader could support the arrest of Christians for having different views.
Well, what I can tell you is I asked the Christian leader in Kyiv if that was in fact happening, and he assured me that it was not. People were not being persecuted for their religious beliefs. Now, let me take a break here. I know we disagree on this strongly, but I respect your right to your opinion on Ukraine, and I trust you'll respect mine. Look, I've been to Ukraine now twice. My wife and I traveled into Ukraine a month after the initiation of hostilities. We traveled then with a group called Samaritan's Purse, providing Christian relief to the millions of Ukrainians, women and children of every age that had to flee that country in the face of the unprovoked Russian invasion that began a year and a half ago. I did return, took a 11-hour train ride into Kyiv, also again with Samaritan's Purse. We not only met with government leaders, but we met with Christian relief workers. We're literally rebuilding homes of people in small towns, little hamlets, that a year ago were being shelled by Russian tanks. All the people in that community were just sitting in their homes. I mean, the truth is, what I saw was not just evidence of war, but I saw evil. And I believe that it is in the interest of the United States of America to continue to give the Ukrainian military the resources that they need to repel the Russian invasion and restore their sovereignty.
Would you, may I ask, would you be, and I believe you have a good faith position on this, and we have disagreements on it, but I want to just, I can't let you elide over the question of the treatment of Christians.
I know, I heard
and
that
would
again.
You be, well, no, but hold on. Would you,
not,
be, would
the
you
problem
be
is
willing?
You don't accept my answer. I just told you that I asked the religious leader in Kyiv if it was happening. You asked me if I raised the issue, and I did.
And I'm saying
I also raised it with
incorrect.
The Ukrainians, and I was told that there are religious leaders who have been working with the Russian military that is murdering people by the thousands.
Okay.
I mean, Tucker, look.
Wait, but hold on. Don't you think?
Let me explain to you what I think our national interest is there.
I would think you would have greater concern for religious liberty in Ukraine. And I'm surprised
I told
by your
you I raised the issue of religious liberty.
No, you spoke to one person who's clearly
I didn't
on
say
one
I spoke
side
to
of it. And there are many, many news reports that are not disputed by anybody that
right.
many clergy have been arrested in Ukraine. And I'm merely saying I may not agree with their views. I'm not Russian Orthodox. But you can't arrest clergy for having different views, period. Because if you do, you violate the basic tenet of
religion. Look, I want to be clear with you. I won't stand by it. I won't stand for it. If people are being persecuted for their religious beliefs, I won't stand for it. In any country with which the country of our nation is supporting or our allies are supporting,
yes.
period, paragraph. But let me say to you, our national interest in Ukraine, I believe, is born of the fact that I spent 10 years on the Foreign Affairs Committee in the House of Representatives. I spent 4 years as Vice President. I've met Vladimir Putin. Let me tell you, if Vladimir Putin overruns Ukraine, I have no doubt that in a short period of time, that Russian military is going to cross a border of a NATO country that our armed forces will have to go and defend. You know, I started the day this morning at Rosie's in Zionsville, Indiana, with my son, Captain Michael J. Pence in the United States Marine Corps. My son's a fighter pilot. My son-in-law is a Navy fighter pilot. And I'll tell you what, I never want to see American armed forces in Ukraine. I want to give the Ukrainian military what they need to fight and repel the Russian invasion. I think we need to stop them there so that our men and women in uniform are never called upon to stop that Russian military when they cross a border that we would have to defend.
So you would oppose Ukraine entering NATO? Because that would, of course, immediately require us to go to war with Russia, which you oppose.
You know, I said very clearly that Ukrainian entrance into NATO should depend on when the war is over. And I made that clear with President Zelensky that that was my view. And what I understood in speaking with him was he understood that it needed to be conditional. If we were to allow Ukraine to join NATO today, then the obligations of the NATO Treaty on Mutual Defense would initiate immediately, and we'd be pulled into a conflict. I don't want that to happen. But I do believe that after the war is won and over, that welcoming Ukraine into NATO, embracing them with open arms in the West, is in the interest of our security and of our nation in the long term. Now, let me also say, I think this fight is also about China, Tucker. I know we don't talk about that enough. I know a lot of people say, and you may hear from some other candidates in this race, that we ought to be focused on China. Well, I gave the first major speech in our administration changing administration policy on China. We called them out. We imposed tariffs. We rebuilt our military. I mean, in a very real sense, we were tougher on China than any administration in the modern era had ever been. But I really do believe that by giving the Ukrainian military what they need to repel the invasion, we will also send a deafening message to China that America and the free world will not tolerate China's military ambitions in the Asia Pacific or their intention that becomes more clear by the day against Taiwan or any other place. But I really do believe peace comes through strength, and the United States of America needs to continue to project strength. But let me say one last thing.
We've run out of ammunition, so we're sending them cluster bombs. So because we've sent our ammunition to Ukraine, which has not yet won the war, whatever that means, no one has defined it, but isn't that prima facie evidence that we have become weaker militarily by our support from Ukraine, or how am I missing something?
Well,
we're out of ammunition, so we're sending cluster bombs.
Well, first off, since Joe Biden took office, he's been working to cut military spending. And frankly, the recent debt ceiling deal that was done, if they don't pass all their 13 appropriations bills, will result in a 1% cut in our military spending after inflation in 2025. Look, China is floating a new battleship every month in the Pacific. We don't need to rebuild our military. We need to build a military strong enough to meet the challenges America will face in the 21st century. And as President of the United States, I'll do that. I promise you.
Last question on Ukraine. The Pentagon says that because of the munitions and the material we have sent to Ukraine, we're very low in our stockpiles. Is that a concern to you?
Yeah. On the 155 artillery. And I have no reason to disbelieve that. Look, the answer is not to shrink from America's role as leader of the free world. The answer is to invest in our national defense. I really do believe that. Look, remember, in a year and a half, and again, we have a strong disagreement on
that. Well, I'm not sure we do.
That's okay. Well, that'd be great if we didn't. But let me say to you, we've made real progress there. Look, A year and a half ago, Russia had the second most powerful military in the world. Today, they have the second most powerful military in Ukraine. All right? That's progress. That's progress. And that's a result of what the United States and our allies have invested. But let me say one thing about Joe Biden on this, okay. And I've been critical of him. Look, our administration came in, and the Obama-Biden administration had refused to give military support and resources to Ukraine. We ended that. We started providing Javelin missiles. I'll never forget standing in the woods a couple of weeks ago in a little town called Moshe where the soldier told me about when the Russian tanks approached and how many soldiers they lost in the first 24 hours. And then the colonel looked at me and smiled and said, and then the Javelin missiles arrived. And I said, we sent you those Javelin missiles. And he said, yes, sir, you did. I mean, we provided arms to Ukraine so they would be better equipped for this moment.
But we asked a question. Biden
cut off military spending when he came in, and even after that heartless, unprovoked invasion, which Joe Biden actually said, we don't know what we'd do if it was a small invasion. I mean, he signaled incredible weakness, especially after that disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan. And all along the way, the Biden administration has been slow in providing military support. Make no mistake about this. We promised them 33 Abrams tanks in January. I heard again 2 weeks ago in Ukraine, they still don't have them. We've been telling them we'll train their F-16 pilots, but now they're saying maybe January we'll let somebody transfer some jets.
I'm sorry, Mr. Vice President. I know you're running for president. You are distressed that the Ukrainians don't have enough American tanks. Every city in the United States has become much worse over the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Drive around. There's not one city that's gotten better in the United States.
Right.
And it's visible. Our economy has degraded. The suicide rate has jumped. Public filth and disorder and crime have exponentially increased. And yet, your concern is that the Ukrainians, a country most people can't find on a map, who've received tens of billions of U.S. tax dollars, don't have enough tanks. I think it's a fair question to ask, like, where's the concern for the United States in that?
Well, it's not my concern. Tucker, I've heard that routine from you before, but that's not my concern. I'm running for president of the United States because I think this country's in a lot of trouble. I think Joe Biden has weakened America at home and abroad. And as president of the United States, we're going to restore law and order in our cities. We're going to secure our border. We're going to get this economy moving again. And we're going to make sure that we have men and women on our courts at every level that will stand for the right to life and defend all the God-given liberties enshrined in our Constitution. Anybody that says that we can't be the leader of the free world and solve our problems at home has a pretty small view of the greatest nation on earth. We can do both. And as president of the United States, we will secure our border, we will support our military, we will revive our economy and stand by our values, and we will also lead the world for freedom under my administration. I promise you.
Amen. Vice President Mike Pence, thank you very much.
Thank you, Tucker.
Thank you. Thank you.
Baker, Tucker, you motherfucker, you.
All right, we just heard
from Mike Pence.
I'm checking in here, Sarah Gonzalez.
I care about the American
people. Fuck them. I'm going to work with you. Still here with us.
I need that money.
And I'm also joined
by
Matthew Peterson. He is the new Blaze Media Editor-in-Chief. We are so excited to have him. Peterson founded the American Mind, a publication of the Claremont Institute, and served as their Vice President of Education. He has 2 decades of experience in digital media, communications, political consulting, and program evaluation arising from a lifelong dedication to shaping hearts and minds to renew America. And he, I would say, he lives in Dallas. This isn't on the paper, but I know he is a California refugee, which I find to be important because you do know what it's like to live on the other side of the country.
Yes, I am very happy to be back in America.
yeah, we're glad you're here. So obviously a little bit of some tense moments between Tucker and Mike Pence, particularly when it came to talking about January 6th, when it came to talking about Ukraine as well. But I want to flash back here for a second and kind of open up the conversation with Trump's CNN town hall several months ago when he was asked whether he would apologize to Mike Pence for what happened on January 6th. This is clip 15. Watch.
One person who was at the Capitol that day, as you know, with your vice president, Mike Pence, who says that you endangered his life on that day.
I don't think he was in any danger.
Mr. President, do you feel that you owe him an apology?
No, because he did something wrong. He should have put the votes back to the state legislatures, and I think we would have had a different outcome. I really do. I like Mike Pence very much. He's a very fine man. He's a very nice man. He made a mistake. His lawyer said, you cannot move. I called him the human conveyor belt. I said, even if the votes, you mean, I talked to his lawyer, even if the votes are absolutely fraudulent, he can't, yes, sir, he can't send back. And the Democrats played it, and the RINOs played it. Right after the election, they all met, the RINOs and the Democrats, and they worked out a plan to make sure that future vice presidents don't do what I said you could do.
Legal experts, including Republican legal experts, say that he does not have that authority, Mr.
Caitlin,
President. But I want to
move
on.
Why did they change the law then, saying that you can't do it?
They didn't change the law. They strengthened the law because they were worried about
presidents
exploiting.
Oh, they strengthened it, meaning you could do it. Thank you.
That's not what it means.
Thank you.
Now, Mike Pence today, talking about January 6th, you noted he was very emotional. He used very emotional language, very descriptive language. It almost sounded like he had some sort of PTSD from the day, when in actuality, they verified all of those votes just a few hours later after everything happened. And so I'm just wondering, is he in touch with the base that he's talking to at all? Because to me, that didn't sound like a message that would resonate to this audience here.
Yeah, you notice how he always invokes these stern, solemn tones of the statesman, staid, right, very laid back, very serious. He tried to give a nod to Ashley Babbitt, and I'm glad that Tucker called him out on that.
Saying, yeah.
Wait, people died. Who are you talking about?
Yeah.
Because
and I think maybe
media
Tucker
lies about, the protesters killing people.
Yeah.
Right, let's call it out. And then he goes
Tucker
to Ashley Babbitt.
Him.
And it absolutely saved him, because otherwise you'd be thinking, okay, so you're just condemning all the protesters that day. And, he did come out and say that. That was nice, but it felt like he was trying to throw a bone or be balanced in his staid, solemn, pronunciations on the topic.
In other words, he was trying to talk shit and circle around the bullshit. But the fun part was he said he didn't care. Not his concern. The American people. That was the question. America. Ain't that funny? I don't know. Can anybody?
You heard him.
Yeah.
You heard him. Not my concern. Not my concern. You sorry motherfucker. You are a traitorous motherfucker.
Yeah.
Goddamn piece of shit. Piece of shit.
I mean, that really proved it. He punched his own goddamn clock in that one. He did. He did. He punched his own clock.
Yeah, he fucked himself right there. Boy, he fucked
him.
I wouldn't vote for the fucker. I wouldn't vote for the motherfucker anyway.
He tried to explain himself out of it. After he done said, he tried to explain himself out of it, though, I'll strengthen the military and put up the wall and get more law enforcement. But it ain't what you said a minute ago, motherfucker. You're not concerned. You're more
concerned
with Ukraine. That's exactly what you said, Mike.
Exactly what he said.
Yeah.
I wouldn't vote for that motherfucker. I would vote for a pile of dog shit.
Yeah, but he said something wrong. He said Ukraine, but he fucked up the word when he said it. So, that, that's a little Joe. That's a little Joe. I said, I'll be damned, little Joe.
You're right. That last clip you played was right. Why did they change the law after? The law said that the vice president had the ability to do what we wanted him to do and send the damn thing back to the state, right?
Right.
Had the ability. That's what the law it said that. And then after January 6th, they changed the goddamn law to say that basically he's just ceremonial, right?
Right.
And that's what they did. They changed the goddamn law.
Right.
Anyway,
we got Rob and Suzette with us. Rob and Suzette, 909. I see you're not a big pants man. If you're typing in the chat.
I'm banging my head on the wall right now after all hearing all this.
Yeah, pretty fucked up, ain't it?
That's
fucked up. Is right. God damn.
Yeah.
I did,
And he's smiling when he says it, I bet, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
I didn't even like that motherfucker back when he was 16. I thought he was a little fucking rat then. The only reason,
well,
you know,
just think, if he wins the presidency. Wow.
Oh, my God.
That'd be a mind fuck, wouldn't it?
That'd be a mind fuck, wouldn't it?
Joe did it. He was the most likely motherfucker to win it. He was. I don't know how the fuck he won. I don't see it. I can't decide. No. That just can't be true. Something's wrong.
What,
you know, like I said, they did this on purpose. COVID is the fucking reason they got by with it. COVID. Anyway, you can call in now because you got like 10 minutes left, 12 minutes left, 563-99-3726. Call right now, 563-99-3726, and you can talk to us for a few more minutes after showtime.
That one little four or five word statement, it's not my concern. That's not my concern. Four words, you know, three and a half words, whatever, four and a half words, or whatever it is, that's not my concern. That should end his campaign today.
Yeah, that ended it. He's toast. Toast. Bye-bye.
No, you made this shit up, right?
Ron DeSantis is toast as well. Because
no, it's real.
He's firing people off of his campaign, and he's not getting the donations that he should be getting, and his campaign is not growing the way it should be growing, so he's done. Now, who's the next person of this list of the dwarves, you know, the seven dwarves or whatever the fuck it is, that's going to say something or do something that's going to end their campaign? Nikki Haley, Tim Scott,
this clip has 188K views, so 188,000 people watched it in the past 2 days. Anyway, 6,145 comments in this.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, guys.
And the first one I'm seeing says, great job, Tucker. You were able to get Pence to expose himself.
Yeah.
There he is, what he did.
But yeah,
and then here's another one. It says, wow, Mike Pence, you're doing an excellent job for explaining why we should vote for Trump.
Yep. But guys, I think what's happening is, other than Pence and this guy, I think the one guy that's in the presidential race as a stance that's not actually running for president is Ramaswamy. He's not running for president. He's running for vice president. He wants to be Trump's running mate, I think.
I got to put this out here. It says here, seeing Pence scared shitless of Tucker is priceless. And he was in the video. He was scared to death. Tucker was fucking him up, man. It's fucking hilarious.
That was fucking great.
Yeah, it was.
Yep.
Fox really fucked up when he lost that guy.
You know what? It was the worst thing in the world for Fox to fire Tucker Carlson.
I didn't know I could dislike Pence any more than I already did. I was wrong.
Oh, sweet.
Jesus Christ.
Well, like I was saying there, Ron, in the comments, you know, it could be Pence and Romney. You know, that made me sick.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Yeah, that'd be bad. But people caught on to that little saying, Michael. You know, they did. Yeah, here's one that says, I can't believe a presidential candidate said the state of America is not his concern. Exactly. Yeah. More than one person, people caught this shit. You know what I'm saying? That was a fucking hook. That was like a fish hook right in the eye. You know? Motherfucker. Good God.
I mean, that was hilarious. Big, fat, juicy worm on the hook, you know? That's what that was.
For who? What? For us? Is that for us?
For us what?
for us, we're the ones that got hooked.
No, Pence got hooked. He got hooked in the fucking eye.
I know. I mean,
with his mouth,
I feel like,
man.
It sounds like wait a minute, where's that hook coming from? Because I think we got it.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about America. Oh, fuck, there, you've got a good hit. Bring him in, that motherfucker, in. Reel him in. Yeah. The one who did good, and what they were applauding, they weren't applauding fucking Pence. They was applauding Tucker Carlson. You know what I mean? That's who they were applauding. Pence didn't get shit. Nobody gave a fuck about him at all. He was shit. He was fucking himself. And when Tucker fired the first time, old fucking Pence got nervous as a whore in fucking church. I swear to God he did. He could see him. He's really being real selective in the shit he would say. And just, you know, blah, 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 blah. I said, I call him Little Joe.
Yep. He fucked himself good.
But we need more people like Tucker Carlson. We need more people like me fucking doing what I do. You know, shit like that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't give a fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking tell the goddamn truth. Everybody on this fucking panel night fucking, because we tell the fucking truth, we know. We see it.
Well, here.
We got, what,
here,
four or five people on here? So, you know. If we're all on the same fucking page of this shit. Nobody's arguing about nothing of it.
You know, guys, Megyn Kelly did an interview with Dan Bongino about a month or so ago. And during that interview, Dan Bongino picked up his phone, and they were talking about Tucker Carlson and Dan Bongino and stuff, and equating them to each other. And what Dan Bongino said is he picked up his phone and I don't know which news outlet he went to, but he picked up his phone and he said, Dan Bongino could give zero fucks, and Tucker Carlson gives even less fucks. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. You know.
Hey, ain't that
more people like that.
Ain't that Bongino character? Did you see the clip of where Trump was going to that wrestling match? I mean,
yes.
The crowd went wild. But Joe Biden got the votes. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah.
There must have been 25,000
people. It was so wild that... What was that other guy? Rogan?
Rogan went up
to fucking... Yeah, Joe Rogan.
Yeah, he went up to Trump and shook his hand. And it was like he was trying to tell Trump something. He goes on, I mean, about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. That's not your typical handshake,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, yeah, that they went wild for Trump at that event.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's another little clip somebody posted in the chat. On this, anyway, it says, Tucker, America is in a disaster. Pence, that's not my concern. What a dumb fucker. Well, fucking stupid could you be? Nancy Pelosi wouldn't be that fucking stupid. Her only fucking problem is she says the same thing. It's for the children. That's all she says. It's for the children. Nothing else. There's no... Say nothing else about the children. For the children.
Maxine,
I want to fuck you out of money
Waters,
for the children. Yeah, Maxine Waters, go to your gasoline stations and fuck them up. If you're a Republican, don't fuck around, motherfucker.
And all you homeless people,
a gasoline station, get out and bitch slap that motherfucker.
Hey, all you homeless people, go home.
Go home. Pick your spot, motherfuckers. Free world, free country. Do whatever the fuck.
Free.
You want. That's right. Free.
We're free.
Yeah.
And
right.
They got back.
Are you going to San Francisco? Yeah, because it's got free rent and drugs.
Frisco. And they got backup, remember? Oh, my God, they got backup.
Shake and bake.
Backup.
Remember Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat?
I didn't know only restaurant was available in fucking San Francisco. And it was a treat there. It's a treat to have Cerrone in San Francisco in your tent, motherfucker.
You
next
to
a pile of dog
Francisco,
shit, human shit, human shit, and two or three fucking needles. You know, Cerrone, the San Francisco treat.
Hey, you guys, I got to call it, but y'all have a good night, okay?
All right, Robbie, brother, you have a good day. Yeah, I'm going to blot here to you pretty soon. Yeah, I got 3 minutes left. That's on my candy show, so. Yep.
Uh-huh.
It's been a fun one, though. It's been a fun show.
Oh, that's not my concern.
It's not my concern no more, motherfuckers. Oh, my God. Just when you think you've heard it all.
You know
what
that also tells me? That also tells me if the first place you go is you go to Ukraine, that tells me that he's on a take.
He's owned by corporations. His money back. They run him, man. Fuck. Ain't no doubt about it.
I mean, generally speaking, I mean, back in the day, the first place these guys would go would be Israel, you know?
Sure.
Which I can see, you know, but...
The Israelis will execute them later once they realize the money's been cut off from the government, so they'll fucking execute them.
Yeah. I can't believe that Trump said so many nice things about him. I mean, then he backstabbed him like that? And did,
he wasn't expecting it. You know, in other words, Pence played Trump. That's that.
Trump played him. Yeah, he played him. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right. Absolutely.
He's focusing on the number two guy in the race, and the number two guy in the race is DeSantis. Once he's done with DeSantis,
he ain't looking too good no more either, man. Santos ain't looking too good right now.
No, that's the point.
So,
once he's done with DeSantis decides that, and it's coming, Brian, DeSantis is going to decide to get out the race because he's not getting the
he's
going to
run out of
money.
He's already got rid of 12 staffers, man. He's out of money. He's running out of money real fast. He's blowing money like a crazy man. You know? He's going way beyond what he should be doing this early. You know what I mean? You don't pull the big guns out until towards the end, you know? You don't pull them out first. Fuck you. What are you, retarded? Fuck. Hey, whatever. Have fun with the money, motherfucker, but it ain't going to last forever. That's a given.
No, and that's the thing. Once these people leave, these donors leave him, He's done. He's got no choice but to quit the race.
Yeah, walk away. Exactly. Yeah, you got no money to run. Fuck, you're done.
Well,
then
I'm guessing the next guy up would be Pence. The next guy up would be Pence, right?
I don't see that. I just don't see it. No, I don't see that happening.
It's going to be true.
We took Carlson pretty well iced his own cake. But he said that. Motherfucker ain't concerned about the American people. Fuck them. Fuck the American people. And he's going to get questions. I mean, you know, you got people commenting on the same fucking thing that he fucking said. People caught that.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
You know?
I caught it.
All kinds
it.
Of bullshit reasons. It's too late, man. It's too late.
Yeah,
oh, it was an audio fuck up.
That
ain't what he said. You know, hey, right.
Yeah. I was watching it, and I said, oh, my God, what did he just say? He just fucked himself good right there.
Yeah,
and I'm glad.
Absolutely.
He's gone. Yeah, he ain't got no chance in hell.
Yeah,
I wouldn't want to vote for him anyway.
He fucking cooked his fucking goose right then and there. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
we'll see more.
Right,
we'll see more about it. You'll see it. It's going to come out. All over the place, man.
It's going to be.
We've seen bad things before. I mean, what's his name? Dukakis riding on a tank and all that crap. You know.
Yeah,
he should never. And what was it?
What did it prove?
What did it prove
him riding on a tank? Nothing. Didn't prove shit. So, you know, it just showed he's retarded. I'm supposed to be impressed by this, man? That ain't what you're supposed to be doing, playing with toys like that. You know, burning up money and shit is for a better reason, you know? You want to play political bullshit. You know? Look at me. I'm on a thing. Fuck it. God.
Yeah.
I say things
then,
I can't.
And then, of course, what was the guy's name? Gary Hart or whatever. Not Gary Hart, but 1984, the guy comes in and, oh, I'm gonna use a goddamn burger joint's slogan for my political slogan. Where's the beef? You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how bad is that? I mean, these people aren't the smartest people in the world. They claim to be.
Yep.
No, they're not the smartest people in the world.
No, they're
not. No. I'm by the wrong side.
Not by far.
I mean.
But anyway, all right, guys, I'm a bell. Go ahead.
Okay, see you later.
Okay. All right, yeah, I'm going to bail, dude. Tomorrow's Monday fucking morning. Oh, it is Monday morning already.
It is Monday.
Fuck me. Yes, son of a bitch. So here we go. All right, then, Gunn, I'm going to throw a song up, and I'm going to bail, and I will see you later, bro. Have a good one. All right. See y'all.
I wanna fly away, yeah.